Hey everybody, welcome to the Ultra High Net Worth Clients Podcast, where I, Chris Broadhead, interview the most successful financial advisors in the world to hear exactly how they maximize their marketing, amplify their assets under management, and close their ultra high net worth clients. I've been helping financial advisors to find more clients and grow their assets under management using cutting edge and wildly effective marketing strategies for years. If you are a financial advisor looking to grow your AUM, this is the podcast for you. Please go to uhnwc.com to download your free copy of our How to Find Ultra High Net Worth Clients ebook. All right, let's start the episode. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Ultra High Net Worth Clients podcast. I'm your host, Chris Broadhead. Today, we have the pleasure of talking with Brian Kearney. Brian, can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you?
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me on. Yeah, Brian Kearney, I've been an advisor for 22 years. I'm the CEO of a registered investment advisor in the great state of Delaware called River's Edge Advisors.
Awesome. And you're a native Delawarean.
That's right. Very boring. I've never left. Grew up here. And most people, when they say hear I'm from Delaware, they always say, oh, I drove through there once. And that's about right.
You're like, I take that as the highest compliment.
Exactly.
Well, that's you were like, that's your lineage to be a financial advisor. Delaware has very favorable tax laws, right?
And as a matter of fact, our office is right next door to the courthouse. So when Twitter was sued, Elon Musk was literally next door to us, and the press presence was unlike anything you've ever seen before. So it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, he knows how to get some attention.
That's for sure.
That's awesome. So tell us, you know, start at the beginning. Tell us how you got into this wild world of financial advising.
Yeah. Well, I went to college to be a physical therapist. I knew that I wanted to do physical therapy and did an internship, and I was like, oh man, this is not what I was hoping it would be. I was assuming I was going to work on, you know, professional athletes. And then what you really end up doing is working on people that are 80 that just had a double knee replacement. And it's not quite as exciting as being on the sidelines of an NFL game. Mm-hmm. So I was staring down at two different jobs. I was either going to sell copy machines or I was going to be a financial advisor. When I signed my contract to be an advisor, part of the reason I did it is because the recruiter at the time told me this is the hardest thing you'll ever do. And I wanted to kind of prove her wrong. I didn't even, when I signed my contract, I didn't even know how the S&P 500, what it was, how the stock market worked. I knew nothing. So, I spent my first, you know, 3 years essentially learning the business and, you know, what it actually meant to be a financial advisor.
Mm-hmm. So you were quite literally cutting your teeth.
Quite literally, 22 years old. My second week in the business was September 11th, 2001. So,
okay.
Not the best time to be starting in the investment business, but, you know, and I started out on the insurance side. So, you know, I was really doing a lot of insurance, which I thought was part of an overall financial plan. And it turned out as I got, you know, a little bit of distance from it, we probably were using too much insurance at the time. And, you know, really not, we were avoiding doing really good, hardcore financial planning. And that's what, you know, that was the impetus for me shifting my entire career focus.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're 22, learning the ropes, 9/11 happens. You're still chugging along.
Yeah.
How did you get some traction?
So I had an incredible manager at my first job, and I love this guy, and you know, I'm still friendly with him today. And he said, go see as many people as you possibly can. And they did a really good job of teaching me activity. And I believe back in the day, it was, we had to schedule 15 meetings a week to see 10 people to get one client. And I just did what he told me to do. So I went out and I tried to meet as many people, asked for referrals, and just grinded for like the first 5 years. You know, I worked an insane amount. I was working till 10 o'clock every night. But when you're like 23 or 24, like, what else are you going to do? You know, I wasn't, you know, missing out on anything. We were still, you know, I still had my weekends, but I was, you know, trying to talk to as many people as I possibly could and bring on clients. And that's what I did. So I did that for 7 years. And they said, you know, try to get 100 new clients every year. And I did it. And then I realized that that comes with a lot of service work, which I was also doing. So that became sort of the issue with my overall business.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you're working even more than half days. You're going like 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. How do you maintain your sanity during those stretches?
Well, you know, it was funny because I grew up, when I was at this firm, we were all young. We were all like 22, 23, and we were all going through it together. So it was like an initiation into the industry. And I think a couple of things. Number one, I was pretty honest. People would say like, how's it going? I'd say, I got 2 weeks left tops in this business. I'm not sure I'm even going to make it. And now I was half joking, but I was partly serious. It was that difficult. And I think we all were able to commiserate with one another. And you know, I think part of the reason that I didn't ever quit, and you know, when I don't know what the statistics are now, but back then it was 90% of advisors that started failed.
Wow.
And I didn't want to be one of those statistics. And I didn't know what else I was going to do. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to keep going and just keep getting my teeth kicked in. And that's what I did. And it eventually starts getting easier.
Yeah. Your teeth grow callous on the...
It is true. I mean, we used to joke around. We used to have a red light on our phones. And we used to have to do phoning. And like every Monday, this is back in the day when you have to hit the phones. And we would come in on Monday and we would call it the red light of death, because it meant all the appointments you had set up the week before were going to cancel. You know, they were going to reschedule, and we called it the red light of death. And we used to joke and say, so-and-so canceled because their cat got the sniffles. And it was, I would walk in at one time. I had 22 meetings set, and I walked in on a Monday morning and I had 16 reschedules.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So you know, like, you feel real positive. And then it is trying to manage the highs and lows when you're first starting out is really a difficult thing.
That sounds brutal, man.
It was brutal. I think that's a perfect word for it.
So how were you setting up these like 15 to 25 meetings a week?
So I would go and I would say, I would meet you and I would, you know, do some planning for you. And at the end, I would say, hey, Chris, I know we helped you with some financial planning and got you squared away. Who do you know that could benefit from going through the process that you went through? And I would sit there and it was like a game of chicken. Whoever spoke first lost. So I would wait for them to talk and they would start rattling off names and I would ask for their number or their email address. And then I would call them and I would say, hey, so-and-so, Chris told me to call you. He thought you could benefit from what I was doing. So, you know, that's how I got started. That's nowhere near what I do now, but you know, that was a good way. Like I get chills just thinking about having to do that now, just sitting in a room with a client, asking them like, hey, can you give me 10 of your friends' names? And then waiting for them to give me the numbers. I could never do that now, but I did it because that's what they told me to do. And that's what they told me I needed to do to be successful.
Yeah. Well, it obviously worked out.
Yeah. So far.
That's awesome. So as your career evolved and your teeth grew stronger and stronger, callous, did you hone in on a specific client that you could best serve, that you liked working with the best, or how did that focus go?
Yeah, I think I really shifted to, you know, the focus being on trying to get people to quote unquote buy stuff from me, whether it be an investment or an insurance policy or whatever. And I really switched the focus to doing financial planning. And what I realized is that people have questions that they want answers to. And when I started focusing on providing answers and solutions, that's when the business really took off. It's really, you know, people come to you and they say, hey, can I do X? And usually X is, can I retire at 65 and live on X amount of dollars a year? And if you say to them, no, you can't, people actually feel good about that, right? Yes is obviously the best answer. I don't know is the one that gives people the most anxiety. So if they have a question and you can say, you can't do what you want to do unless you do this and you lay out a strategy for them, or you have to change your goal. Are you willing to do that? And you're either willing to you save the amount of money or stop spending the amount of money that you need to in order to achieve that goal, or you have to delay the goal and change it. So once we started having conversations about actual planning, that's when things really started to change.
Okay. So once you got more involved in directly working with the clients?
Yeah. And I would say really laying out strategies and doing high-end, in-depth financial planning. That's when things really started to shift. Mm-hmm. And, you know, spending less time talking about investments and why they should be invested in XYZ fund, and more time talking about, if you get a 6% rate of return, this is what that means for you. You know, stop comparing investments to an arbitrary benchmark like the S&P 500, because that doesn't actually mean anything in the grand scheme of their overall financial goal. So if they need to achieve a 6% growth rate in order to retire at 65, well, shifting the conversation to, your investments did 8%, here's what that means for your ability to retire at 65. That's when, you know, people really start to resonate, and that makes them feel better. And they start delegating their financial stress over to you.
So it sounds like, you know, seeing the impact of your work really kind of excited you and got you more, I guess, excited. Yeah.
I think that is a perfect way to put it. And I know this sounds obnoxious to say, but financial advisors can really change the trajectory of a client's life. So when you step back and you look at it through that lens, and you can realize how much you helped people, I think that's when the magic starts to happen. And I can tell you the exact story that happened for me. I had a client who unfortunately was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and he was married, his second wife, and she was a little bit younger than him, and she knew absolutely nothing about money. And he had prepared, he saved money his whole life, obviously wasn't expecting to get cancer and die in his late 50s. He might have been 62 when he passed away. We prepared, he and I, with his wife, to transition all of his wealth over to her. We educated her about, she had, you know, like literally started from a knowledge level of zero. And I just talked to her this week, you know, and we were able to teach her enough to make her feel comfortable making major financial decisions. So when he passed away, we had created this plan, and I saw the relief on her face, like as we were going through this, and she felt confident in about what we had planned for. And now we were just going through and just enacting what we had already planned for. So that was really eye-opening for me. And, you know, I get pumped up talking about it now because I know how much I helped her. We joked around and I told her that I was the second most important man in her life. And, you know, we always joke around about that, but it really was true for a period of time where I, you know, helping her get comfortable with this newly found responsibility of her own wealth.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like your client really bestowed that trust onto you. He's like, listen, I'm not going to be around. I need someone I trust, you, to make sure my most important person is taken care of.
You're absolutely right. He was pretty he was forthcoming about that. He was like, this is a really important thing. I'm really trusting you with this. And he said it half joking, but I knew he was serious. Like, don't screw this up. So, and we made sure that everything that he had wanted to have happen happened. So, you know, I think in a weird way, I think it gave him the ability to not have to worry about her after he was gone, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that actually helped in some way as well.
A more peaceful passing.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, people don't remember, hey, you got me 12% in my portfolio in 2018. They remember that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. They remember the things that actually matter.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think our industry, you know, I do speak poorly of our industry from time to time, but I do think our industry spends too much time talking about products and investment returns and things that aren't important, as opposed to talking about the outcomes that we provide for our clients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's really, you know, these interviews always start off like, okay, you know, like, what's your strategy? Like, how do you do this? And it always, it's like, no, let's talk about the things that actually matter, like the impact we're making on our clients' lives.
Exactly. I mean, like I said, it sounds obnoxious to say, but we really do have the ability to change the trajectory of a client's life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's emotional, and it's also compounding interest is like, I think Einstein said it was like the most interesting phenomenon and like in existence. And it's like financial advisors are the magicians that can, you know, bestow the compounding interest on someone. So
yeah, to your point, I think this profession is part art, part science. You know, we always talk about how every financial decision has two sides of the coin. There's the number, there's the math answer. Do I have enough money at an interest rate to do what I want to do? The answer to that is yes or no, right? We can give you the best math answer that ever existed. But there's also a behavioral finance component or emotional component, because money makes people feel a certain way. And, you know, sometimes we could give a client the best math answer of all time, and they say, that doesn't feel right to me. Then we have to say, okay, well, let's dig into that. Let's unpack that. Why does that not feel okay to you? What's giving you pause? And then once we get to understand that, we can understand why a client makes decisions about their finances, then we can provide even better financial advice to them.
Yeah,
people aren't textbooks. They're not a question on a CFP exam, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they have real feelings. So being able to attack a client from one of their problems from both of those angles, I think is hugely valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and valuable to them. And it helps you gain a deeper understanding of your client to better serve them.
Exactly. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I want to understand more about your later career. I know eventually you set off on your own. You started your own practice. Can you tell us about that journey?
Yeah. So I had I worked for one firm, switched to another, had a mentor there, and you know, he was really focused on insurance. And I kept telling him, he's in his 70s now, and I kept telling him, I really think financial planning is the way to go. I really think people are going to pay for planning. They want advice. They want to pay someone and know, I'm paying you for an advice, like they pay their accountant or they pay their attorney. And he said, I don't think anyone's ever going to do that. So I said, okay, well, I'm going to leave. And you know, that's what I have to do, because that's where I think the direction of the firm is going. I ended up joining up with one of the guys I worked with at my first firm, and he's a technician. So he's my business partner. His name's Jarrett Morris. He is a technician. So what we found in our relationship is I do everything he hates. He does everything I hate. Mm-hmm. So we're like a perfect combo. I love, you know, I always say I'm a super social person. You could blindfold me, drive me 5 miles, 50 miles out into the middle of nowhere, drop me off at a bar, and I'll have a great time that night meeting people. But if you want me to dig into line 47 of a spreadsheet so you can see why your cash flow says that, that's not me. It doesn't excite me, but that excites him. Mm. So now we have this dual approach where the two of us go in together, and you know, I talk more about behavioral finance and emotions, and he talks more about math and technical, and he is an incredible technician. So joining forces and having someone that thinks completely differently than me is a great thing for the client. And it's a great thing for us personally, because he gets to spend time doing what he likes to do, and I get to spend time doing the things that I like to do. So it's really, you know, sort of like a match made in heaven. Now, look, make no mistake about it. Much like a marriage, having a business partner is not all rainbows and sunshines. You know, we do have our ups and downs. We do fight. You know, we do have arguments, but we're committed to this firm together. So we always get through it. You know, mm-hmm. It is having a lot of open conversations. And the beauty of our relationship is that we both agree on the direction of the firm. It's just sometimes we may disagree about the minutiae of how to actually make it go forward. So, but that is the reason we went out on our own, is we really wanted to provide an independent platform, remove all the conflicts of interest, be completely product agnostic, and focus on financial planning and lower cost investment management.
Mm-hmm. All right. So many follow-up questions.
Yeah, that was a lot. Sorry about that.
No, that was great. Any advice for other folks out there who have a partner for getting through the ups and downs?
Yeah. So much like a marriage, one of my biggest personality traits that I would love to change is when something bothers me, I like stuff it down, right? And I just keep stuffing it down. And then I finally explode, right? And it's sort of like when you're married and you trip over your wife's shoes and you end up screaming at her for leaving her shoes on the ground. That's not what you're upset about. You're upset about 10 things before that, right? So I think it's really therapeutic to sit down and kind of have like, just, it doesn't serve anyone any good by hiding things and holding things in. By being blunt and upfront, saying like, hey, I don't like that this is happening. This makes me feel this way, I think is a really positive thing to do. And both of us are not great at it, but we're getting better. You know, we just had one of those type of meetings a few months ago when it was like, hey, you're making me feel like this. And he said, well, I'm not doing that. I'm trying to do this. And it was just my point of view, the way I was perceiving what he was doing. He was actually trying to keep me out of meetings for sanity's sake. And I was like, why are you sidelining me? And he said, no, this is what I was trying to do. I go, oh yeah, I don't really want to be in those meetings. You're right. Thank you. I appreciate that now. But that is having a real open line of communication and making sure you're on the same page about the trajectory of your firm, I think is hugely important.
Okay. So, would you recommend like regularly, just even if there's nothing pressing, you're just like, we're just going to meet like once a month to,
yes,
we're not going to call it the airing of the grievances, but that's what it is.
Yeah. I think a sort of like a periodic check-in. We were meeting every week.
Wow.
And, it is interesting because during COVID we were on Teams together for hours a day, every day, just like, dude, this is insane. just commiserating with one another. Like I'm seeing this, he's seeing this. But once we went back to the office, we sort of like, he goes on his path, I go on my path, and we just try to run parallel to one another. And, we kind of lost connection. Like, oh, hey, we got to sit down again and talk about what we're doing, what we're planning to do. So, it is, financial advisors are really good at doing their job, but they're really bad sometimes at focusing on their business. So taking that step back and saying, let's work on the business instead of being constantly in it, I think is really important, especially when you have a partner.
Yeah. Wise words. I'm in the market for a partner. Me and a guy I've done some work with are sort of exploring a partnership. So I'm always very, very curious for partnership tips.
Yeah. And I would say in an ideal world, you can find someone that has a skill set that you don't, right? So if you can find someone that loves to do all the stuff you hate, you should do it. You absolutely should do it because it makes your life easier.
Well, that's what the universe is sending me right now. It's just, a lot of the guests on here have partners. A lot of my close friends who have, much more successful businesses than mine. I'm like, what's different between us? Like, you have a partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like maybe that's the secret.
I've never done strategic coach, but I know a lot of people, talk about strategic coach. Mm-hmm. And I think his name's Dan Sullivan. He talks a lot about unique ability. Everyone has a unique ability. Mm-hmm. And the more time you can spend in your unique ability, doing your unique ability and getting better at it, that's when the magic starts to happen. He has a great book that I'm in the middle of called 10X is Easier Than 2X. Mm-hmm. And it's all about getting hyper-focused on what you're really good at. And I think it's just a tremendous way to attack a business. Secondly, it's way more fun. I find myself just getting like an energy suck when I'm in meetings that are boring, like I'm not interested in this. I'm not interested in talking about, spreadsheets or, these investment deep dives on investments. That doesn't excite me. Talking to clients really excites me.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I love this podcast. I love talking to clients. don't love doing the technical stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So you're like me. So you need a technician.
Yeah, looking that way. Awesome. So you said, you know, you talked to your mentor and you were like, I think the industry is going a different way. There's, you know, personal financial management, more hands-on. I want to do that. He said, no, we're just going to sell products. How did you know the industry was going that way? Because obviously it did.
Yeah, it was, I think being in the life insurance business, I ended up talking to a lot of people that I think they liked me. They wanted to do business with me, but they're like, I don't really need life insurance. My clients don't need life insurance. Let's say I would go talk to an accountant. Then I would go back to them. I'd say, hey, I'm thinking about heading in this direction with planning. And everyone was like, oh my God, I have so many people that need that. And I said, I knew I was on, you know, I knew I could, I was on to something. I've had my CFP since 2008. I was doing planning to some extent in my first role, but really wanted to get way more sophisticated with the planning and really go a deep dive. And when I knew I was right, when I went to my mentor and I said, people want to pay for this service. And he said, no, they don't. And I said, I will bet you they do. I bought e-money out of my own pocket and I charged a client $3,000 to do a financial plan. I went back to him and said, I told you so. And he said, nobody wants to do that. We're not going to do it. So I said, okay. That's how I knew I had to leave. I knew there was a service for it. I just went talking to people just by paying attention to the industry. And I knew that it was that people wanted it. But it actually made it kind of easy because I was like, well, what I want to do, I can't do here. So I have to leave. I have no choice.
Yeah. So it forced you onto the entrepreneurial path.
That's right. I mean, that's like classic E-Myth stuff. It's like, I didn't set out to own a business. I just did it because I thought I could create the mousetrap better than what they were doing. So that's how we ended up where we are.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. So just, it was really just talking to people, listening to them, getting to know people. You're like, I think this industry is going in a completely different direction. And you built an amazing business off of that insight.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's incredible story.
Right? Yeah.
That's awesome. So, we're coming close to the end of our time here.
Yeah.
Delaware, you know, my father was a financial advisor. The guy that always beat him for salesman of the year, didn't always, they traded some, lived just outside of Delaware, in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Near Philly.
Yeah.
And I was like, why do they live there? It seems like cold and I was living in Florida. I was like, why would you live there? He's like, oh, there's a lot of whales up there. It's next to Delaware.
Yeah, that's right. At the time, there was a big bank that was employing a lot of people. It's called MBNA. Bank of America bought it a long time ago. But there were a lot of really wealthy people. There still are a lot of wealthy people here, which is odd for such a small state. But that's hilarious. Yeah. That you said there's a lot of whales. I love it.
To the extent that you feel comfortable, can you talk about, you know, finding some of your biggest clients and how you did that?
Yeah. So, one of the things that the mentor taught me, he said, go talk to advisors, you know, centers of influence. I spent 5 years calling on 285 accountants, tax attorneys, and business attorneys. And essentially what I did, now I'm going to tell you, that's not the most fun group, right? If you're going to have a party, that's not the crew you want to invite, right? So what I did is I sort of started weeding them down to, I would have in my mind, I would call it the car ride test. Could I be stuck with that person for 2 hours, just the two of us in a car? And if I said yes, then I would keep hanging out with them. And I would never ask them for business. I would just tell them about like an interesting case that we worked on, or I would show them a case study, or I would say, oh yeah, that, you know, we're dealing with that right now. And I just kept going to lunch with them, playing golf with them, hanging out with them. And then eventually they would start saying, well, I think I have a client that's right, that just had that issue. Can you help that person? Sure. So that is how I spent, you know, most of my time. So most of our largest clients come from a couple of relationships with estate planning attorneys. who I've now become friends and accountants who I've now become friends with, mm-hmm. like to the point where I hang out with them and we don't even talk about work. Oddly, the other areas is golf. I'm not very good, but when you're handcuffed to someone in a golf cart for 4.5 hours and you just get to know them, you're actually just building a relationship. And I've really just spent my time trying to focus on people I like. If you hang around with enough people that you like, good things will happen. Mm. And I never try to sell people. So I've had a lot of centers of influence finally say like, hey, can you just take care of my stuff too? I saw, you know, you've been helping 3 of my clients. Can you just do me too? And I said, yeah, sure, absolutely. So it's really just like, if you focus on hanging around with good people and just building a relationship because you like them, just genuinely good, and it's totally genuine, good things happen from that. Plus, it's also a really fun way to grow a business. Like, yeah. Hey, let's go have a couple beers or let's go play golf and just hang out.
Yeah, yeah. So what? How would you get their attention initially, like the attorneys or CPAs?
No, that's a good question. I cold emailed everyone. So what I used to do, I was doing this back in like 08, 09. So I was much younger. I didn't have gray in my beard back then. I would just go onto the website of all the firms that I knew, and I would email the youngest looking senior associate or partner. And I would just say, hey, I think we're working with similar clients. I'd like to learn more about your business. Would you meet me for coffee or lunch? And everyone's like, sure, why not? I'm trying to build my network. And I'd say, I'm always looking to build a network of, you know, quality advisors that. So we would go and I would just ask them. And again, I would spend the time asking them as many questions as possible. Mm. I always wanted a meeting to be like 80-20, 80% of them talking, 20% of me talking. And that is, you know, when you really just try to learn about someone, they get excited. Everyone's favorite topic is themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's why I love being on podcasts. When I could talk about myself, I love it. but when you do that, people get enthused about it. And, you know, they know that you actually care about their practice. So that's what I did. Just cold email. It's pretty, everyone's email. Wow. If you're an attorney or an accountant, most of the time their email is available on their website. Yeah. And everyone's super receptive. One tip, do coffee and not lunch. I spend a lot of money on lunch. And when you do lunch, you're trapped by the service. So it's like a blind date. If it's going horribly, it's really difficult to bail on lunch. If you do coffee, first of all, it's $5. Secondly, you can say, all right, well, it was great to meet you if it's going terrible. You know, so that'd be one piece of advice I'd give.
That's good advice for just dating in general as well.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. That's a very unique and effective strategy. And then I imagine if the coffee goes well, it kind of goes from there. You're like, hey, you want to like go get a drink or go play golf or play pickleball or something?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Awesome. So I could literally ask you questions for the rest of the afternoon, but I will let you enjoy Halloween with your families.
Thanks, Chris. Family. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So I have one final question for you. It's an open-ended question. You can take it in any direction you like.
Yeah.
It is, what are you working towards?
That's a really good question. So I like this business because it's so hard. I think doing hard stuff regularly makes you a better person, right? So I feel like I am working towards right now being a better business owner. And I ended up, I sort of say like, when you're a financial advisor, you don't ever expect to own your own business. And if you do, you don't ever expect to run it. Now I've had that like entrepreneurial mind shift where I now own a business that just so happens to be financial planning. And the difficulty I'm having, and so what I'm striving to get better at, is trying to run a business, but still do all the things that got us to be successful in the beginning. You get pulled in a million directions when you own a business. You're talking to someone about working from home or how much vacation time they get, or, you know, you're building systems and processes to make it. So I would say, a goal of mine is to become a better leader and a business owner by becoming more efficient.
Awesome. And reading the Dan Sullivan 10X, but easier than 2X.
Yeah. And when you listen to it, you'll be like, yeah, or you, I mean, I listen to it because I drive a little bit. And I always feel like that's cheating when you say you read a book and you really listen to it. So I'm listening to it.
Like, I try to qualify it as well. Like, yeah. I listened to this book.
Exactly. And it's when you start listening to it, you go, well, that makes sense. And it, you know, it really is about doing the things that you really like to do that energize you. And that's going to make you better. It's going to make you a better person and a better business owner.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out. And any other books that you're excited about right now?
Yeah, I love
to listen to right now.
Yeah, so I actually read The Psychology of Money, which is really a good one. That's sort of like, I decided that's going to be my high school / graduation or college graduation gift to everyone. It's really basic, but really good for younger people. I really, really like that book. I thought it was great. And then there's the one behind me. It's called The Behavioral Investor by Daniel Crosby. Really interesting for financial advisors to read and get some real data and some real insight as to how people make financial decisions.
Awesome. Yeah. And where can our audience find out more about you?
Yeah. So our website is riversedgeadvisors.com and I'm on LinkedIn. So you just search Brian Carney and I'm pretty active on LinkedIn.
Yeah. How'd you come up with River's Edge?
Our firm was, before we moved offices, was literally on the river. We were on the river, an area in Delaware called the Riverfront. So it made sense. Now we're not on the river anymore. So, you know, so we were born on the river.
That's cool. No, it's a cool name, River's Edge. It's almost like Razor's Edge.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah, maybe we should have went with that because it wouldn't require us to be on the water.
Well, Brian, this was awesome, man. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Chris, thanks so much for having me on. I loved it. It was great.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. To all our listeners out there, thanks so much for tuning in. Keep on growing out there, everybody. See ya. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed the ideas shared here, please subscribe to the podcast and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and Spotify. Please share this episode with anyone you think will also find value here. You can find short video clips of the best moments from the episode at uhnwc.com and on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at Ultra High Net Worth Clients, and on X at UHNWC Podcast. Please connect with me, Chris Broadhead, Brodhead, on LinkedIn so I can directly answer any AUM growth questions you may have. All right, thanks for listening and keep on growing out there, everybody.